criticizing any of you. I cannot begin to know the different factors that have led some of you to remain single, others to marry but not have children, or whatever. So let's think about the problem. It is a simple fact that the global birth rate has been falling steadily since the 1960s, and it has been below replacement level, 2.2 per woman, since the 1970s, and is falling more rapidly since 2010. It's usually expressed as the average number of children per woman, though men are obviously involved, and the replacement level is 2.2, but the rate in England now stands at 1.4. But you will also be aware that the population of England is rising. There are new housing developments everywhere you look. Surely overpopulation is the problem. Too many people, too few houses, both in England and the world. The UK population is forecast to continue rising until 2047. Now, the fear of a rising population, of being overwhelmed, is as old as history. It drove the unnamed pharaoh of Egypt to order the genocidal policy of throwing newborn Hebrew boys into the Nile. And many nations since have looked anxiously at their fertile neighbours, and fertile neighbours worry about their ability to feed their own people. In 1798, the Reverend Thomas Malthus, vicar of Wotton in Surrey, wrote a controversial essay called An Essay on the Principle of Population. He observed that improving food production eased food shortages temporarily, but led to an population increase until poverty, war, famine returned, the Malthusian catastrophe. He said, "The power of population is indefinitely greater than the power in the earth to produce subsistence for man." And if we look at a graph of the exponential growth of the world population, we might share Thomas's anxiety. There were 1 billion in his day, 2 billion in 1925, now 8 billion, aiming for 10.4 by 2086. But Thomas's fears have proved unfounded. The green agricultural revolution has avoided the mass starvation he predicted. And the global birth rate, marked in a rather faint line in red on the chart, which is the key factor in population growth, has been falling steadily since the 1960s, so that now the global rate stands at replacement level, 2.2, and is likely to reduce further and lead to a gentle reduction in world population, which arguably could be a good thing. But that global average disguises wide national variations. There are some central African countries, Congo, Niger, where the birth rate is 6.1, but many other countries where it is far below replacement, Italy, Russia, Japan, and South Korea at 0.7. As I said, the UK rate is 1.4. What does a falling birth rate do to a country or a town? If you think of the population as effectively being three generations, the new generation of children, the generation of their parents, and the generation of their parents, the grandparents of the children, with a stable population, each generation will be about the same as the one before. But with a replacement rate below, with a birth rate below replacement level, each new generation will be smaller than the previous. A fertility rate of 1.4 means that each new generation is only 63% of the parents' generation. And a rate of 0.7, as in Korea, means 32%. So, within four generations, let's say 110 years, a town like Bovey, with a population in 2024 of 8,204, will be reduced to 1,500. That's a large village. And if this was a town in Japan, we'd be down to a hamlet of 139 people. What does that actually mean? Well, the good news is house prices are really going to fall. But the bad news is there won't be enough workers to care for the elderly, to pay taxes for the National Health Service, for social care and pensions. The triple lock is doomed. Schools will close, settlements will be abandoned, fields will lie uncultivated, and it's already happening in Japan and Korea. Over 1,400 elderly Japanese people a week are discovered dead in their homes, having been there for weeks unnoticed. A recent article in The Telegraph highlighted East Devon as the old age capital of England, and West Devon is number three. So it's a local problem as well. So why is it happening? Who or what is to blame? In the Exodus story, Pharaoh wickedly ordered the infanticide because he and the Egyptians were in dread of their Israelite slaves. Why has the birth rate been falling? Which Pharaoh ordered this? And many governments have encouraged family planning campaigns to prevent being overwhelmed by an exponential growth in population. The Chinese Communist Party had a one-child-only policy from 1979 until 2015. But there's been no mysterious loss of human fertility, though if you've read books like The Handmaid's Tale or The Children of Men, they can help us imagine that terrifying scenario. The obvious causes are much more benign. The scientific and industrial revolutions allowed the population to grow, as Reverend Malthus noticed, and the Green Revolution avoided the famine that he predicted. Improved health and hygiene and have reduced infant mortality rates and increased our longevity. And since the 1960s, improved education and literacy, especially among women, family planning and birth control have allowed women to choose their fertility rate. Women in every developing country have responded to these new circumstances. The birth rate has reduced, and this is to be welcomed. But this success has created or is leading us towards this new problem. The developments which enabled us to avoid uncontrolled population growth also lead us into unsustainable replacement, particularly in developed economies. Now, surveys have been done asking young women how many children they would like to have. And the answers are still well above replacement level. So, what's stopping them? And you will have many ideas from your own experience. The sheer cost of raising a family, of renting or buying a home big enough for two or three children, and a car big enough to put all the car seats in. The cost of childcare if the mother needs or wants to go back to work to pay for the mortgage. There are serious financial disincentives to raising a family. And I think this should be a bit bigger political issue than it is. So I've been encouraged in recent weeks to hear both Bridget Phillipson, Labour Health Secretary, and Danny Kruger of Reform, so that's left and right, agreeing on this. Government needs to encourage families to be larger. But there are also significant social and cultural factors. The most stable foundation for families for raising children is marriage, because parenthood is a demanding role and children need mothers and fathers. But marriage rates are falling and many marriages failing. Today, the Sunday Times announced a new report called Baby Bust from the Centre of Social Justice. I only noticed it this morning, I haven't had time to read it, that blames the shortage of mothers on immature men. Now, that may be unfair. There is also an ideology at work called antinatalism. Don't confuse that with antenatal, the place where you go before the baby arrives. This ideology regards having children as unethical on an overcrowded and ecologically doomed planet. The birth strike movement wants you to spare your potential child from this dystopia, help to reverse climate change, pressure governments to change their policies, and give you freedom to enjoy your life. Our culture stresses freedom, fulfillment for the individual, at the cost of the wider culture. Be true to yourself. You do you. And sadly, it has to be said, our culture does not respect greatly those women who choose to have families and stay at home. And I need to mention the increased rate of abortion. In China, for every 10 million births, there are 9 million abortions. And in Britain, 1 in 3 pregnancies ends in abortion. Now, Anne Faraday is a passionate supporter of women's right to choose. But she wrote in February this year, "When 1 in 3 pregnancies ends in termination, there is something significant going on. Why are 1/3 of all women who receive a positive pregnancy test responding not with joy, but with despair? Why are so many greeting the prospect of motherhood not with excitement, but with fear and despondency? There are clearly socio-cultural forces at work here. For a start, taking the leap to embrace an unplanned pregnancy flies in the face of our risk-averse, hyper-planned, all-about-me modern culture. And the demands of child-raising seem daunting when we no longer know our neighbours, when we live far from our families, where relationships are transient and temporary. Perhaps we shouldn't be shocked that 1/3 of women say no to an unplanned pregnancy. Maybe it's more surprising that 2 out of 3 still take the leap of faith and commit to raising a child." And notice those words, leap of faith. When I was researching this talk, I found alongside a chart of population statistics some online comments. Kimberly: "This is why I chose not to add to the population, and I'm glad I made that decision." The Pharaoh in our times is not our government, it's our own culture, our way of thinking. So, what can anyone do? The Exodus story highlights some heroines who resist the orders of Pharaoh. There are the courageous Hebrew midwives, Shipra and Puah, who disobey and deceive Pharaoh. And the noble daughter of Pharaoh, who takes in the infant Moses and raises him in safety. And there are the ordinary people of Israel, men and women of faith and hope, who don't give up on raising families despite the risk, but cry out to the Lord for rescue. I am glad to see political recognition of the problem on left and right. Dr. Paul Morland, a leading demographer, has surveyed the problem, the causes, and the attempted solutions in his book, No One Left, which I've been reading for the last couple of weeks. If anyone wants to borrow it, please ask me. First come, first served. He shows that government policies, tax breaks, parental leave, childcare alone are not enough. Government policies usually do not last long enough to change the course of a culture. But there are some developing and developed societies where the birth rate is at or above replacement level, such as Indonesia and Israel. Dr. Morland shows that one of the Abrahamic faiths, Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, are usually a major factor in those places. And perhaps the most successful policy of all is in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia. The population is overwhelmingly Georgian Orthodox, despite 70 years of fierce persecution. And the patriarch, Ilya II, is held in high regard. Since 2007, he has personally offered to baptize and be the godparent of every 1/3 child born to a family. He is now currently running at 50,000 godchildren, and he holds 4 mass baptisms a year in the cathedral. And he seems to have inspired the nation, because the national birth rate has risen from 1.5 to 2.2. Now, I am not convinced that the Pope or the Archbishop of Canterbury has the same status to inspire the same result. But this example is an encouragement to us. I believe that as a church, we are called to resist the prophets of climate catastrophe, misinformation about overpopulation, and be people of faith and hope, because we know that we are called by the God who shows love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. To a secular culture, the future is fearful. Raising a new generation just seems reckless. But if we know who holds the future, we can trust him with the future of our children and our children's children. We can sing with Mary in the Magnificat, "From now on, all generations will call me blessed. His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation." Now, everything Anne Faraday said was right. When families are extended and marriages declining, raising children is hard. But as a church family, we can support marriage, and we have, as a church family, a unique resource, which is the envy of many. A community of friends and neighbours, surrogate grandparents, supported by a family worker and volunteers, and hopefully a youth worker. So I hope you haven't misheard me this morning. I am not blaming any individuals because you have produced less than 2.2 children. I am not calling for a patriarchal Republic of Gilead or a fixed birth rate. The church is a community of forgiven sinners. We all fall short of God's glory, and we're all freely forgiven. It's a difficult balancing act, but I believe that it is possible for us as a church to honour those who are single and to celebrate marriage, to uphold the family, to be pro-life, but to be a place of welcome and healing for those who've made bad choices, who are struggling in their marriage or as a single parent. So on this Mothering Sunday, may I invite you to join the resistance to our fearful, self-centered, and antenatal culture. Be a Shipra, a pure, and a daughter of Pharaoh. Have faith and hope in the God who will keep his promises and sustain his people for 1,000 generations till Jesus returns. Let's celebrate Mothering Sunday, not just with a card and a bunch of flowers, but renewed trust in God's purpose for his church as a mother and community for all generations. Amen.